Hello and welcome to a special bonus episode of Two Nerds in a Pod. This is going to be a little bit different because it's just me for the whole time, so I apologize in advance. I needed to address some of the issues with the whole Epic v. the rest of the world going on, particularly because in our usual format where I get 10, or in the case of episode 153, expanded it out to essentially 20 minutes worth of time, there just wasn't enough to really tackle what was going on here, and I felt like it was important to get around it. But first, I need to speak addressing Epic Games. Epic, why would you do this to me? Why? I don't want to be defending Apple here. As a matter of fact, I've been awfully vocal about my dislike slash distaste for their company, products, and actions. So why would you make me come to their defense? Who's next, Epic? Nintendo? Are you gonna play that card? So I don't want Apple to win as a general rule, but when you break the arguments that Epic is making, you know, down to their base components, all I can root for is Apple here, just because these things are so crazy on the face of them. I want to spend most of the time here looking at the temporary restraining order and not the original suits, because the original suits really just rely on the argument that, and keep in mind, Epic does not say anything like, oh, we didn't really break the rules. I mean, there's, yeah, that they really aren't defending their breach of contract, with the exception of the defense that, well, hey, you're a monopoly, so all bets are off, okay? But let's talk about some big general ideas here. Item one. In their marketing claims, Epic is really framing this as a freedom fighter thing, and it is not. They broke a contract to get more money, and they broke their contract in ways that were expressly agreed upon beforehand would result in immediate termination. The fact that both Apple and Google allowed for them 2 weeks to get their crap together and fix the breaches of contract is really a huge olive branch, and likely it was extended as a matter of trying to make peace with someone who wields a lot of power, because objectively, Epic wields a lot of power with both gamers, the public, just name everything about it. I would not expect for anybody else to get such a sweetheart of a deal, but nonetheless, what they did was grounds for immediate termination, no take-backsies. At all, okay? Item number two, Epic planned this. They were prepared from the beginning with marketing videos, hashtag movements, and federal lawsuits. They went into this eyes wide open, knowing exactly what would happen. The fact that they had lawsuits ready to go means that not only were their lawyers and legal team read in on what they were going to do, but their legal team had already combed through all of the agreements that Epic had made between themselves and Apple and Google and so on and so forth. They already knew what rules they were defying, what they were breaking, and they knew the ramifications. They knew that it was going to get them barred from their development tools, from Apple's development tools. They had to have known because they had their people fresh from the fight, as it were, having looked over all of this documentation. And really, any attempt from Apple to pretend like they didn't know exactly what they were doing here is just kind of insulting to your intelligence. Their cash grab, eyes wide open here. Item number three, Epic makes a lot of equivalency sort of arguments throughout everything, making two different things seem like the same thing when they're, or maybe connected when they're not really. Like, for example, they make a big argument in the temporary restraining order that because smartphones are commonplace, that means they have a right to be on them. And they make this argument by saying, hey, look, everybody needs a smartphone, connectivity is important, so important that the federal government has subsidized smartphones, therefore this is an arena that we can't be excluded from because it's in the public interest for everyone to have smartphones, and it's in the public interest for everyone to have us, therefore you have to allow us to remain on the iOS App Store. That's a bit of a stretch. It's not just a bit of a stretch, it's a big stretch. Item number 4, to the monopoly claims, just in general. Think of this whole thing in terms of a grocery store. Narrowly defined, a grocery store is a monopoly. I mean, heck, I have monopoly control over the content of me, Maction. And myself and Mr. Nice Guy, we have monopoly control over the content of Two Nerds in a Pod. That is to say that the only content that comes from us is stuff that we decide on. That means we've got monopoly control on that. And it's also somewhat apropos because it's not like iOS is the only platform in existence. Just in the same way that whatever you're listening to this on is not the only platform. While we have monopoly control over it, we don't also have monopoly control over distribution. We just have the various platforms that this is going to be published on. That doesn't make us preventing you from gaining access. And this is one of the ways that they typically keep framing it in the temporary restraining order and in the lawsuits. They're like, well, iOS, I mean, they've got a monopoly, and now we can't get to our gamers anymore, except for the fact that people can play on many different platforms. There are very few people who have access to only one singular method of getting at Fortnite. Fortnite is ubiquitous and it's the biggest name in gaming, and they know this, so making this argument is disingenuous and a little bit insulting to your intelligence. Anyway, drilling down a little bit deeper, specifically on Epic v. Apple, they claim that Apple has a monopoly on payments and distribution on the Apple App Store. And that's where their big claim rests. They're like, oh, well, we can't let that be. Interestingly enough, because they make a very similar claim when it comes to Google, it's one of those things where it's like, okay, so there's a monopoly, and they have to super narrowly define these terms, right? As long as it's considering only in-app purchases on iOS only, maybe it's an argument. And then it's the exact same argument, in-app purchases on Google App Store only. You know, as long as you super narrowly define that, sure, it looks a lot like a monopoly. But especially in the Google case, you can sideload, you can make purchases. It's one of those things that should just strike you as disingenuous. Anyway, I digress. I'm getting way out in the weeds. Let's talk about the temporary restraining order. In general, a temporary restraining order needs to have several components. And it's actually interesting because in the TRO that they submitted, they actually spelled these out. One, you need to have not just monetary suffering, but you need to have the type of suffering that comes from, that comes from whatever's going on that can't be recouped with just money. Because in the eyes of a court, if it's just something that's a monetary damage, then, well, hey, let's just get you money. You don't need any sort of restraining order. We'll just, figure that in when we give you a cash award type thing. But you want to say, hey, there's not simply a money loss here, which is one thing. Two, you need to be likelihood of success on the merits, is the way it's phrased. And basically, you want to or need to show, hey, we want a temporary restraining order while the case is ongoing. So you need to show, hey, we are very likely to succeed, so that way the court can feel justified in making a temporary restraining order, in giving you some temporary relief while we wait for all the I's to get dotted and the T's to get crossed. That's the idea here. Number 3, the balance of equity being in their favor. And number 4, it being in the public interest. It's much easier to make this type of case for a temporary restraining order when it doesn't merely benefit a company, but it benefits third parties. Public interest is kind of the highlight here. So those are the 4 things that they are trying to hang their hat on, and they say that the proper solution, the the temporary restraining order, the restitution that they need, is they need those developer tools back so that they can continue to work on the Unreal Engine. They need Fortnite to be back on the App Store, presumably so that they can keep making money. We'll come back to that. And they want the most recent version of Fortnite, version 13.40, to be the one that's available. That's the one with the direct payment option, so that they get 100% of the revenue through the direct payment option. So there we are. All right. So let's start with the punchline. The punchline of the end of the restraining order, and I should note that it's a podcast by the name of Opening Arguments, little legal joke there, that has encouraged myself and encourages everybody to start at the end of any motion and read backward, which is actually a really good tip, but I digress. So we start with the punchline, we start with the end, the prayer for relief, right? For all these reasons and more, and we'll get to the reasons, the court should force Apple to put Fortnite back where it belongs on the App Store with their contract-breaking update, disallow Apple from doing anything to them, essentially, until the end of the court case, and then prevent Apple from doing anything to change the code, turn off the code, make changes, or anything like that. They want complete control, and they want none of the fear of, and they define it as, they call it reprisals in the TRO. They couch it as being, oh, big bad Apple is coming after us, and they're doing all these things. I should note, of course, their loss of access to the development tools are because they have proved themselves to be a bad actor and willing to, you know, and willing to make the types of cuts that are expressly forbidden inside of the contract terms. So, anyway. So, reading backwards, we start with the temporary restraining order item number 4. That is public interest. Restoring Fortnite and its direct payment option is strongly in the public interest. If Apple were really worried about security issues, and this is, you know, part of their argument, they've got other options than taking out their anger on us. And you can't just keep us away from billions of users. That would unfairly impact our customers who desperately need us. That's the summary, right, of item number 4. Just a little bit of some more, you know, quotes from it. Quote, Apple claimed it removed the latest version of Fortnite from the App Store in part to keep users safe, right? They give that, and then they cite an Apple statement as it appeared in a Verge article. But if you do read the Apple statement, it's not what Apple claimed. They said that their in their statement that their store policies are applied uniformly in order to ensure safety. They didn't say, we kicked it because it's a safety, you know, because it's a safety concern, although I can see where you would draw that. Their PR response was that they couldn't let this stand. And I can kind of see where Apple's PR team, again, Epic, why you're making me do this, is coming from, because while what Epic did is not malware per se, the practice of hiding your intentions from the storefront and from the public damages the whole endeavor. The type of trust that people have built. Let's not forget that 9 times out of 10, when I or anybody here is either asked or asks why they prefer Apple over, let's say, Google, you know, iOS over Android, or Mac over PC, people will say it's more secure, it's safer, Apples don't get viruses, so on and so forth. Now, whether or not that claim is true, and I have enough time spent in, you know, in computer tech to know that those claims are not nearly as accurate as people think they are, but let's say, but that's kind of immaterial here. That is the perception. People perceive that Apple's quality control has ensured greater safety for their consumers, especially when so much of your personal data is on your phone. Your personal transactions come through your smartphone. The fact that an actor like Epic or like anybody should, could, or would take functionality of an application and hide it from the App Store and from the public in general until they're ready to spring functionality on what's going on is a little bit chilling, right? And this is part of one of the things that Apple is concerned about on their side. This makes them look bad. This makes their review process look bad. And it is damaging to the image that Apple has cultivated over the years. So, yeah. I don't really have any other specifics to offer on, like, you know, because I mean, unfairly impacting their customers who desperately need Fortnite. They're just like, oh, especially when we need to stay home. I'm like, okay, guys. But I mean, like, that's not actually, this isn't actually legal grounds. You know, pull on heartstrings all you want. And in a lot of ways, I feel like many of these things were written not so much for lawyers, but for other people to pick up on and kind of repeat in the public discourse. You know, it's more of a messaging than it is an actual legal argument. Again, as another disclaimer, not being a lawyer, just being someone who plays a lawyer on a podcast, you know, there are probably plays in this at work that I don't see. But nonetheless, I will persevere. Let's go for temporary restraining order item number 3, the balance of equity. In general, the big argument that they make in item 3 is, this isn't such a big deal. What, after all, what does Apple lose but 30% if Fortnite goes back up as it was, right? They're like, Your Honor, we want you to restore this. And restoring this, Fortnite version 13.40, while the balance of equity isn't going to be shifted greatly, right? All Apple loses is their 30%, you know, percent cut. But we lose so much. And they harp a lot on the development tools here. On the subject of losing development tools, they had this to say, quote, Epic also faces retaliation in unrelated areas, end quote. And they go on to talk about the development tools. And it's not really the strong point here. After all, they did something, like I said, that they knew was against the rules and purposely hid it from Apple, from Google, from the consumers. The issue here is that they are facing, and I'll do air quotes, retaliation, because they've shown a willingness to lie and cheat in order to benefit themselves financially. So it's not really an unrelated area to try and curtail a company who has shown themselves to be a bad actor in order to protect their trade secrets. Apple at all. You know, if you are cutting them off now for egregious behavior, you're doing so, and I mean, you know, can we really blame them? What other things are they hiding, or could they be hiding? And I don't want to get too tinfoil hatty here. Temporary restraining order item number 2, success on the merits. So this is the longest of the sections. It's divided into 4 subsections, and several of those subsections have three subsections, or I should say, item A has 3 subsections and has 3 subsections on item number 1. So this is a little tough to parse as we go through, and this is just an audio format, but I'll try and hit the main points and we'll come back to the subsections. So A, Apple forcing in-app purchasing through the App Store is an antitrust violation. That's very arguable. B, unreasonable restraint of trade. C, unlawfully maintaining a monopoly of the in-app purchasing. And D, Apple's store, you know, the iOS store, is an essential facility. So we'll go back to A real quick, because that has 3 subsections, which are they tie distinct products in separate markets, and they say iOS distribution, you know, you downloading an iOS app is one market, and in-app payments is another market. And there came this sort of lovely sort of moment in there where they said, and I'm not going to quote it, I'm just going to paraphrase it, that you can't expect navigating outside of an app. And they do this when they're talking about it because they're like, well, and they're seeing the argument in advance that says, well, hey, why don't you just have people buy it in a different spot, right? And they make the argument, hey, out of application purchases are not equivalent. They're not substitutable for in-app purchases. You can't expect navigating outside of the app to pay for something as a reasonable substitute for in-app purchases. And here's the quote, quote, many in-app transactions are inexpensive microtransactions, situational or both, meaning that users who have had to leave the app would be very unlikely to make the purchase, end quote. Which, that quote there is, we would not make money if we had to ask our customers to do anything more than just click one button. Which is why they say, which is very interesting, you know, kind of funny to hear them say that out loud in a legal filing, that it's just like, hey, we wouldn't make money if it was any harder than a single click for people to buy our stuff. But nonetheless, I found that funny. Item C under the tying of distinct products is they make an argument that distribution of apps and payment for said apps are separate products. And the whole case here is based on allowing third-party payment options instead of just in-app purchases for items that can be consumed outside of the app. So what are we talking about here? They hang their whole case on the idea that that distribution and payment are separate things because the distribution, you can get a good through a purchase in the iOS App Store that doesn't come inside of the app. So that's proof positive that they are separate. And how do they evidence this? They say Amazon purchases, Uber rides, buying foodstuffs, purchasing books. They point to essentially a whole host of real, and by real I mean tangible products, that you can buy inside of an app that are distributed to you otherwise. And they hang their hat on that and they say, see, the fact that you can buy something digitally, on digital, inside of the app, and you can have it exist in the real world is proof that distribution and purchase are two completely separate things. And so, because they've tied it together, that's a monopoly. Which, ooh, they make some brouhaha about, brouhaha, where'd that come from? They make some argument about that these purchases for real items through apps, Amazon's app, Uber's app, and so on, that they are not subject to the same 70-30 split. But I've got to admit, it's, when you read it, it's not very compelling. But, and let's not forget that this is the section that it's success on the merits. This is the segment where they have to bring their A game, and they have to make sure that they hammer home the point. And as not a lawyer, I'm not convinced. I'm interested to hear what real lawyers think about this as time goes on, but, you know, we'll see. Let's see. Apple forcing in-app is antitrust, right? Subsection 2. That was all just subsection 1, right? So subsection 2 of Apple, it's antitrust, is they say that Apple coerces the use of in-app purchases because Apple has 100% of the iOS App Store control. And this kind of feels a bit to me going back to that grocery store analogy. If you walked into a grocery store and you wanted to purchase something, but you objected to the fact that the, you know, the grocery store has a monopoly on the payment options because they only offer certain payment options. They don't take American Express? Monopoly. And it's a little bit more nuanced than that, but not by much, and they certainly don't make the argument very well. Subsection 3 on App Store antitrust, they said, if not for tying in-app purchases through the App Store, that in-app purchasing would just not be as big of a thing. And they make the argument that this has caused, again, financial harm to consumers. But again, it's hard to make that argument because a 30 for the storefront, 70 for the developer split is common amongst all the game stores, with the exception of Epic's own game store, which is a, what is it? It's a 12% and 80, is it 12% and 88? You know, that's the split that they do, but they're the only ones who do it. Everything else is there. So it's hard to make the argument that one store is making everything happen when disparate stores are doing the exact same thing. Now, we can have an argument about whether or not a 37 split is equitable, but it is a very tough argument to say that a 30-70 split, if not for Apple tying the purchase of items through their in-app purchasing inside of the Apple iOS store, that 30-70 split would not be there. And also, let's not forget that even when they offered a direct payment option, they still only offered a 20% discount, right? If it is true that that this weren't about money, then why not sell it at a 30% discount to thumb your nose at them? And that's because it's not about the money, as much as somebody they want to seem to claim it is. So let's see. That's all of the subsections on item A about antitrust. Unreasonable restraint of trade, that was B. C, unlawfully maintaining in monopoly of in-app purchasing. Again, very meh, these arguments. D, Apple's store is an essential facility, all right? So here's where they make some of the more interesting leaps. They say communication is essential, smartphones are essential, iOS access is essential. And then they say a billion people use iOS, and there are no alternative iOS app stores. And that is correct. As far as I'm aware, there are no alternative methods of getting iOS apps except for through the iOS app store. We can have a debate about the virtues and vices of the walled gardens that that Apple sets up, but I have to say that it is their devices, right? They're the ones who have built this. They're the ones who have built a brand identity, and claiming that they don't have the ability, that they don't have the right to exclude bad actors, because let's face it, Epic has been a bad actor in this case. They knew something was against the rules and they did it anyway. And that makes them, you know, that makes it harder for me to follow along and be like, so the answer here is you didn't like the rules, you didn't play by the rules, and now the demand is they have to play by your rules? Oh, that's not a great look. They do also make an interesting comment about how the Epic Game Store works on Mac computers, and yet they won't let us have our own, or they would never let us have our own Epic Game Store on iOS. And that they're like, what's the big deal, guys? If there really was a security risk, if we're so bad, why would you let us have an Epic Game Store on Mac computers? And they really kind of frame that in a way that it's like, that I feel like really tries to get away from the solid footing here, or from the real point, which is, you know, why on earth would that kind of argument allow you to dictate to the to the provider what you get to do? It's really, really some leaps. Temporary restraining order item number one is about irreparable harm. And here's sort of the rundown of the arguments they make here. I'm not going to quote it directly. I'm just going to give you the broad brush strokes here. So for crossplay of Fortnite, all apps have to be on the same version. And if they don't have access to the store, millions of people will be left out in the cold when they update their app in a couple of weeks. They can't wait for the case to get heard in court, but need action now to prevent this. Now, this is an interesting claim because I feel like Epic controls when an application is updated. And while maybe it's egregious or crazy or ridiculous for us to ask, well, hey, just don't update the application for a little while, maybe, so that some people don't get left out in the cold. I mean, maybe that's a bridge too far, but nonetheless, they are 100% in control of when the next update gets pushed. So they are 100% in control of when these tons of iOS users get left out in the cold. And let's remember now that right now, as it stands, if you already had Fortnite on your iPhone, I am given to understand that it is still accessible, that you can still play it, but that eventually it will get pulled if Epic does not remedy these. That was their 2 week. Again, they broke the rules in such a way that said, we will terminate you immediately if you break this rule. They broke that rule, and then Apple still said, and Google still said, hey, you've got 2 weeks before we boot you completely. Anyway, I digress. Also, their Unreal Engine is going to fall by the wayside if Apple won't let them use developer tools anymore, and people will use other engines instead. And then lastly, they say consumers will blame Epic and not Apple for all of these shortcomings, and it will damage their brand in ways that money can't fix. We have to have something done now. So that is their argument for this isn't about money, even though it really is about money. But that's their best arguments for it's not about money, it's about things that we can't fix without money. It's mostly we're going to have damage to the goodwill of our business if this isn't fixed. So, yeah, that's the argument. And again, at the end of the argument, finally, a preliminary injunction that preserves the status quo access to the latest Fortnite content for millions of players, comma, at lower prices, comma, is strongly in the public interest. So, yeah. I mean, the public interest really means that you need to force Apple to sit there in the corner and let them do what they want. Why? Not because they didn't actually break contract, not because their agreement meant that this all gets canceled, not because their lawyers, before they even started doing this, had gone over this stuff with fine-tooth combs and they knew exactly what they were in for when they broke them. But because it's in yours, the public, it's in your interest for them to do what they want, how they want, because of Big Bad Apple. Again, I have to stress, I am no friend of Apple. I am no friend of most of these, you know, insert corporation name here. But really, this just smacks of disingenuous arguments that really sound good, mostly in a marketing standpoint, and really don't seem to hold that much water legally. Again, I'm not a lawyer. I just play one on a podcast. Well, this is where the rant was going to end, but immediately after I recorded the first half, Apple responded to Epic and their TRO, and while I don't have the time to go over all of it, I thought I had mentioned the big points. For starters, Apple responded to the TRO with some of the points that we actually talked about, either in episode 153 or in the first portion of this. And we'll go ahead and just point out some of those. So, just as a general overview, they responded to those four items from the TRO, collectively called the winter test, and they were irreparable harm, likelihood of success on the merits, balance of equity, and being in the public interest. And so, for irreparable harm, they said temporary restraining orders exist to remedy irreparable harm, not easily repairable self-inflicted wounds. Any damage that Epic has sustained, they knew about going in, and furthermore, all they need to do is just roll it back, and everything will be fine. They just need to stop breaching the contract, and they get everything they want. There's no irreparable harm because they did it to themselves. Or to put it in another way, this is essentially they're doing the Hannibal meme. You know the one. The one where it's just like, who shot Hannibal? Why would so-and-so do this? You know the one. But that is basically what their return argument is they did them to themselves and now want to get legal recourse to do whatever they want. Number two, likelihood of success. If all of this, you know, were a monopoly, how can you possibly get Fortnite in multiple places? All they have for their antitrust suit is bald assertions and no supporting evidence. To actually quote it real quick, the lack of factual, economic, and legal support is unsurprising because Epic's antitrust theories, like its orchestrated campaign, are a transparent veneer for its effort to co-opt for itself the benefits of the App Store without paying or complying with important requirements that are critical to protect user safety, security, and privacy. Item number three, the balance of equity, which I kind of summarized earlier by saying, hey, the only thing Apple loses out on, Your Honor, is just a little bit of money. We lose out on so much more. But they respond by saying the harm that comes to Apple from trying to grant a temporary restraining order like this is that suddenly everyone gets to file temporary restraining orders and get everything the App Store provides without following the rules or paying the tolls. And we'll come back to that in a minute. And then the last one, they didn't so much spend a lot of time on the public interest question, just as saying, hey, look, just because there are a lot of people who play Fortnite does not automatically make it public interest. And just because cell phones and communication are important does not also automatically make video games on cell phones the part of the public interest. Summed up this whole thing, Apple says this line, which is lovely: injunctions do not exist to give parties the contracts they wish they had. And that's the mic drop there. Now, there are a couple of things of context that additionally these responses give. For one, on the subject of money, in general, Apple claims that 80% of the apps on the App Store do not give any revenue whatsoever to Apple because they are not only free offerings, but they are also without in-app purchases and therefore don't get charged. So functionally, they claim that without in-app purchases, there is no real current method that they could use to support the App Store if they weren't taking that cut. That's, you know, we could talk about that. We also learned that Tim Sweeney, current CEO of Epic, emailed Apple about 12 hours before they breached contract. This would be a 2 a.m. email, saying, quote, Epic will no longer adhere to Apple's payment processing restrictions. It also goes on to talk a little bit about, we will fight them on the beaches, we will fight them in the, you know, everywhere. They're like, we will take this out for years if we have to, because of the injustices of the land, as it were. Apple did draw an interesting distinction in talking about the temporary restraining order and said, which I thought was a very interesting point, Your Honor, even if the court finds in favor of a temporary restraining order, consider that what we should be doing is preserving the status quo. And the status quo, by that, we mean rolling things back to the last uncontested status between the two parties, which would not be 13.4.0. It would not be with the additional payment option. If, for whatever reason, Your Honor, you want to go ahead and give this restraining order and tell us to put Fortnite back up, you should really be restoring it to the previous one, the one that nobody had any troubles with, the one that was working just fine before the hotfix. That, if you're going to say that we have to let it up there, let it be the thing that we both agreed was fine instead of this one version that we don't agree is fine, which is honestly a pretty darn compelling response. Even if you find in favor of Epic, roll it back, have them roll it back, and we can be fine. And they do spend a lot of the time really pointing out, the whole legal team, that it's like, look, this is all their fault. Or, you know, the fact that we're in this mess. The fact that you, Your Honor, are wasting time looking at this. But they could fix it in an instant. There is no recourse that is not utterly within their control on this. So it's going to be very interesting. But yeah, I had to throw that in there. Thanks for listening. Be excellent to each other and keep it nerdy.